What's going on, guys? Welcome back to the Art of Suffering podcast with Dalton Tarnell. Today, we have Merritt Roach. He reached out to me on Facebook. I think, if I remember correctly, you might have suggested a few people for the podcast, and I was like, man, you should just come on and we do an episode. Uh-oh. Hello? We might have to reconnect. I should have. Well, shoot. There we are.
Yeah, hey, man, I don't know what happened. I don't know if I didn't have good service or what was going on there.
But yeah, that happens from time to time.
Yeah, okay. So, all right, I've got myself closer to our Wi-Fi router. Maybe that'll help.
Yeah. Okay, I'll just intro it, and then we'll jump right in if you're cool with that.
Yep.
Okay. What's going on, guys? Welcome back to the Art of Suffering podcast with Dalton Darnell. Today, we have Merritt Roach. He commented on a Facebook post, I think, and you might have mentioned a couple of people that would be good for the podcast, and then I was like, you should just come on the podcast yourself. Am I remembering that correctly?
Yes, sir. Yeah. I knew of a few people that I thought would be good on it, but you reached out to me, and I was like, well, heck yeah, sure, I'll talk.
Yeah, why not? That's the whole point of the whole thing, is just to share the stories and kind of lessons learned and kind of see what we can get from everybody else. That way, maybe we don't bump our heads as many times as we might would have. You know what I mean?
Yep, yep.
So, Merritt, tell me a little bit about yourself, man. Where are you from? How old are you? Kind of what do you do?
Yeah, so I'm 25. I'm from El Dorado Springs, Missouri. I'm married, and we have one baby girl. I work for the Natural Resource Conservation Service, as a soil conservationist, and, we live here on 10 acres and we kind of just do our day to day and go to work 9 to 5 and come home and do what we can with the horses and stuff whenever we're home. So,
yeah. So what's that look like as a you said soil conservationist?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. So my job is to take kind of anybody that is looking to get some assistance, or whether that is potentially financial assistance or just technical assistance. Maybe they're wanting to do some rotational grazing, or they're wanting to start doing some cover crops, or anything kind of in the ag industry that has a potential for kind of some commercial use. We have different practices and stuff like that that I help people implement throughout what they're doing. So say you've got somebody here with 100 acres that has 30 head of cows they're wanting to graze, but they don't have the money to put in water tanks and interior fencing. We'll come in and do some assessments, and through our process we may be able to help them be able to put in some water lines and water tanks and some fence.
Okay. Is this through the state or through the federal government?
This is federal. It's USDA.
Okay, cool. So well, that's cool. You like that line of work?
Yeah, right. It's not too bad. It's not too bad. I get to help a lot of people, and I get to see a lot of different operations, and it's allowed me to work in different places throughout the state. So,
So you're on the road quite a bit?
I'm out of Lawrence County, Missouri, but I cover 4 counties there. So I'm in, it's called APOSA, but I work in Berry County, Lawrence County, Newton County, and McDonald County.
Okay,
they're in the
cool
southwest corner of Missouri.
Okay, sweet. So, I assume, how did you find the podcast?
So I've followed you guys on YouTube for a long time, and I follow you guys on Facebook, and I had seen you had posted it. And I don't know, I kind of just got in kind of a slump and was, you know, like, man, I need to start working on myself. And I had seen your reels that you had done for the podcast as I was scrolling on Facebook, and I was like, you know, I'll give that a listen. And I've got an hour and 15 minute commute each day on, you know, one way to work. So I was like, well, you know, I'll give this a listen. And it has tremendously helped me see where I need to be focusing on more as being a better husband and a better dad, because, you know, it's awful tempting to come home and sit in the chair in the evenings and, you know, just kind of veg out. But, you know, I ought to be helping do some dishes or folding some laundry or anything like that. So it was just my mindless scrolling is kind of how I found it. So
you tell me about the slump a little bit. What's the slump look like?
Man, so I go to work at, I get there at 7, and I get off at 4:30. So I'm gone, and then, so I leave the house about 5:30, and I don't get home again until 5:30. So I'm gone about 12 hours a day. So my job is like, it's not physically draining at all. I sit in a rolly chair or a truck seat most days, but it's like mind dragging. And it's so, I come home and I use that as an excuse of like, you know, I don't need to, I've been working. I don't need to busy myself with little projects around the house that, you know, those can wait till tomorrow. I was doing that a lot. I would just, and my wife, she was kind of, it would frustrate her that I wasn't helping, you know, just do the little things, maybe bath time for our baby or, you know, helping with bedtime. And, you know, hearing somebody else calling it out on the podcasts, and you know how sometimes you hear something from somebody else that's not normally who you'd hear it from, and it hits a little different.
100%.
Yeah. So, you know,
my wife knows that too.
Yeah, she, you know, her being like, hey, come help with these dishes, come help with this, come help with that. And it's like, you know, again, versus, you know, going in and listening to the podcast and being like, I ought to really be doing that, because there's more to that than just, you know, just doing the dishes. You know, there's more behind it. You know, it shows that you love them and you're willing to put your feelings aside to do that. So
what's your wife do for a living?
So she works for Rural Development, which is also a USDA agency. So she goes and puts in the same amount of hours doing the same computer work that I do throughout the day. So that was another thing. She was doing the same amount of work. She's on the road a little bit less than I am, but, you know, I needed to see that I just wasn't carrying my weight. And she's a full-time worker.
Did you meet
worker.
Her there?
No. We met in college. No. So we did actually work together for a while though. She actually worked in RCS with me for a while, out of a different office. So that was kind of fun. I got to train her. So that was pretty cool. We got to go on different, training visits and stuff like that. So that was cool. But we actually met in college, at College of the Ozarks. I don't know if you've heard of that school down in Branson, Missouri.
No, that don't mean nothing.
It's a, I want to, you know, maybe a little shout out to it. It's a private Christian school that, it's a four-year school, but you work for your tuition. So it doesn't cost you anything. So you graduate with a bachelor's degree with no student debt.
That's how she ought to be done. Yeah, that's pretty good.
Yeah. That's helped my wife and I a lot. We both went there, graduated from there, and it has that place was really good for us, because I definitely think that age 18 to 22 that most people, you know, there's a lot of roads that people walk up and down on that kind of deal. And, you know, being at a Christ-minded school with people that are like-minded and focused on Christ while you're there really helps set you up for going into, you know, maybe life on your own or life with a spouse or, you know, having kids. Because, you know, being an 18-year-old, there's a lot of different ways you could go.
Not many of them very good.
Right. Well, and, you know, nobody wants to go to 4 years of school, but, you know, while you're there, you might as well get to hear something about Jesus and go be required to go to church because you may get something out of it. And so there was definitely some stuff there that wasn't the funnest, but I would recommend it to anybody and I'd do it over again. So
how old's the baby?
She is almost 9 months.
Oof. Year one, so baby. Year one's a write-off. That's tough.
Oh, yeah. Yep. I get
tough on year.
Tuesdays and Fridays, I got baby duty. So,
Are those your off days?
So, working for the government, one of the benefits is we get 3 months of paid paternal leave. So I have split that up into helping with babysitting since we can't afford for my wife to stay home right now.
Yeah.
So that's our end goal, is her to be able to be at home.
Yeah, we had the same experience, my man. We after my firstborn came along, I stayed home with him for, it took us 2 years. It took us 2 years to get my wife home. A lot of long days with the little guy. That first year is a tough one. But it is, it gets better. It gets better, I promise. And one of my biggest regrets in life was my misunderstanding of my wife's struggle after the first kid. I was just very ignorant to the fact that of how really traumatizing it is to have a child. It's basically child rearing or having a kid is God's punishment because of what Eve did in the garden. I mean, he literally says it. He says your punishment will be bearing children, you know, and you just can't quite have enough empathy for that. So I spent a lot of time in those first 2 years struggling with my wife and struggling with the way she felt and kind of the way she acted. And it was just sheer ignorance. And if there's one thing I could go back and change, it would be the way that I responded to that first one. And it kind of got healed a little bit with my second one, because that second one, round two, I was ready. I knew what was coming. And so nothing surprised me that time. And, but man, that first year for them is so, so hard. Especially working, like my wife worked, cause she was the only one making money. So when Wiley came along, I was cowboying for a living and I made $100 a day, made about $350 a week. And so I was like, well, I can take that whole paycheck and give it to some dink and let him raise my kid. Or I can quit what I love to do. And so I quit and stayed home. And in that time, I was able to build 310. And I worked for free for 310 for the whole time I was at home. So until we could pay us enough for my wife to stay here. But it was, man, that first year is freaking brutal. Anybody with a less than a one-year-old, dude, my hat's off. Survival, like just make it to the end of the road, you know.
And it's such a learning curve, man. Like you go from being just the married couple there for a little while, you know, and then all of a sudden, you know, you have this baby, and it's like, well, where's my, you know, start here and end here kind of deal. And
Have you noticed? Okay, so I got this buddy of mine. I started a men's group about a month ago, and every Tuesday night I cook hamburgers at the rope shop and everybody comes. There's maybe seven or eight of them. And, my shop manager, her name's Madison, and Madison is an incredible human being. Fantastic. They got like a 18 month old maybe. And her husband Keith started coming to the men's group, and she's talking about, like when we're at work, we don't talk about what we talk about at men's group, but she is like, the change in this guy is unbelievable. Like, so I guess what I'm asking is, since you have started to kind of look yourself in the mirror, so to speak, and go, man, we got more in the tank than what we've been doing. Have you noticed any changes in your marriage since then?
Yeah, I definitely. So in the evenings, like I don't get nagged near as much. And that keeps me in a better mood, and it totally keeps my wife, Micah, in a better mood. The Lord bless her, because she's had so much patience with me. Like, you know how a guy can get. It's just, you know, you look at yourself, you know, you look back at yourself in the mirror. It's like, man, I was just kind of just bleh. And, you know, she's much happier with me. And like you said, there's way more in the tank of an evening than a guy lets on, because, you know, she's had this step challenge thing she's been doing. And, you know, last night I got off work, and the last thing I wanted to do was to go for a walk. But as soon as I hit the door, we put our walking shoes on, and, you know, we went for a walk. And by the time we got back, it was pouring rain, but we had the best laugh and the funnest time. And our baby, she had a blast playing in the rain. So, you know, it's those kind of deals. Had I not decided to get up and go do something and, you know, put my wife first, we wouldn't have had that fun time outside.
Well, and it's funny, because this is how we find ourselves in a wreck, and you won't even know it. You won't even know that it's happening until it's happened, and then you're in the wreck. And so, you know, you say no to the walk, you don't ever do the dishes, you don't help with the stuff, and you ignore the nagging, and you become, you know, almost numb to it. And that's the thing. It's funny. Like, I post the shorts or the reels or whatever of this podcast, and especially the sexless marriage episode, like those shorts and those reels, people commented on and be like, I did all those things and she still left, or she still cheated, or whatever. And I'm just going to be the first one to call bullshit. You didn't do them. Because if you did, she wouldn't have left. I don't know what to say. There is a level of work ethic that's required to be a good dad and a good husband that the faint of heart just quite simply do not have. And you can, if you are looking at yourself in the way that I've got it figured out, I'm done, right? I'm a good husband, quote unquote, you're beat. It's the same way with being a horseman. If you look at yourself in the mirror and go, I know everything there is to know about horses, you probably suck with horses. The guys who are the best at that, they don't think that way. They always think, I can fix this one little thing. I can look at this, I can do this. I can apply a little more pressure here, or I can release faster. That's how those guys think. And it's the same way with being a husband or a dad. If you are sitting around thinking, I got it all figured out, you probably don't got a damn thing going on. You know what I mean? And if we can maintain the same, and that's the hard part. The hard part is maintaining it. But if we maintain the posture of, there's always a way to be a little better, a little better. And like, I had a conversation with my wife yesterday. I wrote her, she turned, Sunday, she turned 32. Okay. And so it's the start of a new year for her. So day one of her being 32, I wrote her a letter. And I wrote her a letter about what my goals were. And my goals were to be a better husband. So for this 365 days, I want to be a better husband. And so I wrote everything in there, all the little phrases she said to me over the 31 year that I remembered, that they were correction, maybe, you know what I mean? Or you didn't quite handle it how I wanted to. And the main one that stuck out to me was, when I say something to you, you become defensive. So like, she would correct me or give me a different way of doing something, I would be defensive, which is just such a shitty way to posture yourself.
Oh, like I've been the same way, man. I've been the same way.
it's the worst, right? Like you go to offer some advice to somebody and they're like, hey, you know what I mean? So I wrote in the letter, I was like, my goal for this year is to work on that. But with that being said, the person who knows what they want the most would be you. And I was at the gym and I was praying for my wife and about my wife. And I was asking God, I was like, God, I want to be a better husband. I want to be a better husband. How can I be a better? And it was like clear as day. It was like, he said to me, I gave you a perfectly reasonable wife to ask this question to. Why are you bugging me about this? You know what I mean? Like, you have all the answers you need. You simply need to ask the question, and then don't be a defensive prick when she says something. And so I wrote in that letter, the last page is a series of questions, right? Like, what makes you feel the most loved? What gives you the butterfly feeling? What pisses you off? What gets on your nerves? What builds resentment? Like, and my hope is that she answers those questions and I can take a little something from it. But the whole idea of the deal is like, once you come to the spot that you've come to, which every young husband does, right? Where you just kind of go, damn, dude, I just don't feel great about that. Like, I don't feel like I'm doing a good job. The struggle from there is not allowing the enemy to infiltrate your mind when it comes to maintaining that attitude till you're dead.
Yeah.
Which is a good thing. It's good to know. You have to get to the end of yourself before you know. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. Otherwise, it's not good.
Yeah. Was there a moment where you were like, God, man, I'm kind of being a piece of crap? Like, well, or was it like overtime?
It was kind of an overtime deal because, you know, I would be like, you know, this week we're going to do better. And then it was, you know, then you might slag off a day or two and, you know, she might say something to you. And what the crappy part about it is, it's little things. Like the dishes, there's myself and my wife and our, you know, 8-month-old baby that live here. That ain't that many dishes, you know? Mm-hmm. It ain't that hard to load the dishwasher. It ain't that hard to unload the dishwasher. I know where everything goes, you know?
Yeah.
Just as well as she knows where everything goes. And, you know, folding laundry. It's her socks and my socks and some baby clothes. You know, it 30 minutes, you know?
Yeah.
And there's nothing that says you can't sit in the living room and have the TV on while you're sorting socks.
Nope. You know, that's totally legal. Things.
Yeah, you know, she likes to bake and she likes to do all these different things. So yeah, there's a few extra dishes, but I'm the guy in here eating that sourdough bread that she's making or these desserts that she's making or whatever. So, you know, I might as well be helping clean up if I'm going to, you know, eat what she's making. So it's.
Has she said anything to you since you started doing this?
Yeah, she has thanked me, for helping out. She doesn't nag at me as much. She may just say, hey, would you mind to do this before such and such? Or, you know, before you call it an evening, would you mind to run out and do this real quick? But I've kind of started, I'm trying to find these little things and I want to try to beat her to them. So she's got a garden. And, you know, so if she's doing bedtime, I may run out there when I'm doing chores, I may water the garden. So, you know, small things like that, you know, they 5 minutes, but that means so much to her because then now she doesn't have to run out and do that after she's put the baby to bed, and she's gotten lunch stuff ready for tomorrow. So, and it'll make your life just a lot easier choosing to put them first. But like you said earlier, there's so much more fuel in the tank. If I got to do what I wanted when I come home, I would come home, ride my horse for a little while, and sit in my chair. If I've got the energy to come home and, you know, ride my horse or do some leather work or even sit in my chair and scroll on my phone, there's 2 or 3 hours there that you're just wasting away and rotting in your body. You're just rotting there, doing nothing, being absolutely, you're not helping nobody and you ain't making no money and you ain't doing no good. You're just engrossed in your phone and that doesn't do anybody any good. You're killing time doing nothing. So, and I think there's a lot of people that struggle with that because the mindless scrolling, it is so easy to get sucked into that, and you just have to be conscious about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, dude, I started doing this thing where, like, so my phone rings constantly because of 310 and all the stuff, and, like, yeah, Bill. It's okay. There's plenty in there. We got this new thing, dude. Wally, come show them your chalk. Okay. So we've been watching American Ninja Warrior. Okay. We put a pole in the yard. Show the camera right there. See the camera? So we got our gym chalk.
Oh, yeah, got, buddy. Okay.
That's good. That's good. So we got us a pull-up bar in the yard, and he's been practicing his ninja skills. So he chalks up, gets out there, and does his swinging and all the stuff. And
I did it with one hand.
Oh, you did it one hand today? Nice work. Okay, go get after it. It's okay if it spills. We got more. Okay, where was I? So one thing I found, and this is important to not get into the cycle. So, like, for myself, I will literally move heaven and earth for my wife to try and make her feel loved or honored or respected or whatever. My burnout comes if there's no attaboy at the end.
Mm.
And so I'm pretty big about communicating with my wife. I'm like, hey, listen, this is a gift for you. Like I'm doing this as a gift because I love you and I want you to feel this way, but I got to get that attaboy. You got to give me the, hey, thank you so much. I appreciate that, you know? And then, like you said, you start looking for little things to beat her to, which kind of my philosophy on that is you outwork your wife by 10, you know? And if she starts giving the attaboys and that starts getting good to you, it keeps you energized. Like, you're like, okay, yeah, let's go. What's the next thing? What's the next thing? What's the next thing? And it's this cycle of, like, it almost becomes a reward to you to watch her sit on the couch.
Right.
It's like,
right,
you know, something that they rarely get to do. But that's cool, man. I tell you what, that's and it's funny, like, I guess I'm assuming you and your wife are both believers.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. Because y'all met at the Christian school, right?
Yes, sir.
So that, I mean, it's funny to me, like, does your wife ever do any researching on what the Bible says a wife should be or any of that stuff, or go to those small groups and stuff?
So with having a baby right now, small groups don't really work for us. We've been wanting to try to go to some, but yeah, she does do some of that reading and such like that. And we've got a really good church that we attend on Sundays. And every once in a while, he'll do a sermon on, like, you know, what a wife is to a husband and what a husband is to a wife. And so, you know, every once in a while, you know, isn't it wives are as precious as, is it rubies?
Jewels, yeah.
Jewels, yeah. So I try to be conscious of that, and, you know, every once in a while she has to remind me of how awesome she is for me, which, you know, any day without her would be a horrible day. She has helped me tremendously in just making sure that I maintain on just a good solid path, because without her, I would just go be absolutely kind of just useless. I'd just kind of go do the things I wanted to do and wouldn't really worry about anybody else. And so having her helps to give me not a purpose, but, like, helps drive me to be better.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Where do you think that comes from? What were your folks like?
Oh, my folks are really great. They have a great marriage. We really look up to their marriage. My dad has always been a hard worker, and my mom has always been super loving. And I grew up in a Christian home, you know, church every Sunday, and you know, studying through the week. And they just have one of those marriages. And, like, my grandparents, they also they were married for like 60 years before my grandpa passed. And that's just, that's something we, her and I are striving for, is to live that kind of a marriage and have that kind of a life to where you can tell we have deeply loved each other and cared for each other every day, no matter what.
Mm-hmm. Was there anything that you can remember from your past that your dad did, which you were like, man, I'm going to do that different?
Yeah. So my dad grew up in a, like, so his dad wasn't, his dad was a Vietnam vet. So like he came home and he just wasn't the same after the Vietnam War. So my dad and his dad didn't have the greatest relationship. And it took my dad a long time, to learn how to say, thank you and I'm sorry. So growing up, I really wanted to make sure that that was something that I made different in my life, that I will do with my wife and my kids, is to show appreciation and to also admit that I was wrong in something. Not that he wouldn't admit that he was wrong, but you may not get a, I'm sorry I said that like that, or I'm sorry, you know, I hollered at you. I had no reason to. And as he's gotten older, he's definitely changed a lot and does that stuff now. But growing up,
them grandbabies, them grandbabies will do that.
Yeah. Well, and I definitely think so. Swapping churches, and so we went to a church, and there was just a, it just wasn't, it didn't feel super God-centered. And then so we swapped churches and got into a new community of people, and it's helped us all tremendously.
So your parents went to the new church too?
Yeah, so they're the ones that found it, and so we've started going with them, and that's helped us all. We're, you know how having a good community just makes you a better person, and that's that church. There, it's a small church. They just had their 100-year ceremony to like commemorate that the church has been there for 100 years, and it's still the little farm town church that it's always been, to where we praise God and we, you know, sing and pray, and it's just a very good place.
Yeah. Did you when your dad was going through this change of like from being a bit of a harder man to a softer man, which happens quite a bit with age, and grandkids. I've experienced that with my stepdad. Was a very hard man growing up, and he totally different animal now. Like not even the same dude. It's like my kids, he's like a big teddy bear with them. But my question is were you a part of that change at all, or are you just kind of around for it? You know what I mean? Like when he was, when this was happening, was he saying anything to you? Was he like, man, I'm, you know, my bad?
Well, so there was definitely, so growing up and going out to college and stuff like that was whenever I really started to notice it the most. Going off to college, I kind of found, you know, I was living on my own, kind of becoming my own person, you know, away from my family deal. So then I would call my dad out on some things. You know, I was 18, I was a man, so, you know, if he pissed me off or whatever, I was going to tell him straight whether I thought he was right or he was wrong. And I think that helped a little bit to kind of get maybe his wheels start spinning. And then just now we're both comfortable calling each other out on different things of, you know, if somebody should have apologized for something that was said, somebody catches them on the side and says, hey, you should really rethink on how you approach that situation and how you carried out what you said, because, you know, you don't talk to somebody like that. And
yeah,
so I definitely think, you know, he and I doing that for each other now, it's helped tremendously. But also, you know, he being a grandpa now, we call him Grumps. But yeah, that having a granddaughter has totally melted him. He's just a big teddy bear now.
They ain't got a chance. That's interesting to me. It sounds like that relationship shifted more of a father-son role, more of a friend role. Of course, he's always your dad, but you get what I'm saying. Like,
yeah. Well,
more peers.
That's the best way to see it is, you know, I still respect him as my father. You know, he will always be that figure to me. But at the same time, I am also a man now, and he is a man. So we have that man's respect of, you know, we're able to call each other out on that stuff. And the best way to do it is don't be an asshole when you do it. Pull somebody off to the side and say, hey, but then like I did that, or I don't agree with you. Mm-hmm. And just carry it out like gentlemen. You don't got to be a turd.
Yeah, no, so, 100%. It's never received if you're a turd.
Right. It's the same way as if listening. Your wife's nagging at you, you know, if she says, honey, would you mind to fix the coffee pot?
Yeah.
Sure. You know, versus, hey, get over there and fix the coffee pot. You were supposed to do that 20 minutes ago. Mm-hmm. Same kind of deal.
Yeah. Well, and that's kind of what I'm getting at is like, you start going through the list of things, and I would highly recommend everybody listening to look this up. Just do a quick Google search of what a husband's responsibility is to a wife. And the verses you're going to come across don't ever say if or when. They just say to do it. And so you treat your wife like she's more precious than jewels. You honor her always. You respect her always, right? You lead her always. And it never says, if your wife says something to you kind, honor her. That's not what it says, right? It doesn't say when your wife is submitting to you, lead her. That's not what it says. It says to lead her, right? And the same goes for a wife. So one of the biggies is a wife should respect her husband. And part of respecting your husband is the way you say things. And that streak goes both ways. And what you'll find often with married couples, especially young married couples, is they just be talking crazy as hell all the time. They just be talking crazy, just out the side of their neck. A husband gets mad at their wife and is just being a total a-hole. And hey, I'm as guilty as the day is long. I have talked crazy as a run-over dog to my wife. And the fact is like, it doesn't get you anywhere. All it does is build resentment, and she hates you and doesn't want to talk to you anymore. And so you have to train yourself in the way that, like, regardless of what the environment is around us, we are the same. And I did an episode not too long ago where I talked about being consistent, regardless of the outside world. And regardless of the stress at work, regardless of how you feel, regardless of all the things. Because here's the facts. The facts are your wife's emotions are almost always going to be quite bigger than yours. And if everybody's in this emotional state of turmoil, it's going to be a problem. And so I've started compartmentalizing these things in a way that's like, no matter what is happening, I'm going to respond consistently, right? Now, I might say, like if my wife was like, get up and take the trash out, I might would say, hey, man, my bad for not seeing it earlier, but can we not, you know, just, hey, a little please will go a long way. That's leading. That's leading your wife. That's communicating well that I didn't really appreciate the way that was said. I understand that I should have seen it already, but I didn't really appreciate the way it was said. And then if your wife has read Proverbs 31, if she's read 1 Corinthians, it should trigger a little conviction. But see, if everyone's not getting convicted, then it's a problem. Because if there's no conviction, right, if there's no little voice, the little Jesus in your head saying you're kind of being a prick, well, then you're just right all the time. And if everyone's heart is not for everyone else's good, it's going to be a problem. And so I found myself being the guy that gets something said to him like that, and I get angry. And this would have been many years ago. And I hated that feeling. And my response would be ugly. You know what I mean? Just for somebody saying, take the trash out. But if that's communicated respectfully on the front end, then on the back end, it's received respectfully and vice versa. And people don't, especially young people, it's very hard for young people to look inward and go, man, I am just not doing it. I'm just not doing the job. And I commend you for that. I really do. Because I don't really know who listens to this podcast. I don't know if it's a bunch of 25-year-olds or a bunch of 50-year-olds or whatever. But really, honestly, what's funny about 25 and 50-year-olds is that they're both really hard to change. 50-year-olds are hard to change and 25-year-olds are hard to change. Now, you get somewhere in the middle when you start getting real miserable with your life. Those guys are pretty soft. Like, I got a group of 35-year-olds coming tonight to eat hamburgers, and every one of them dudes in there is as broken as a sheet of glass that fell off the counter. You know what I mean? So, and what you have to do is maintain a softness to the Lord that's like, turn me into what I'm supposed to be. And then, you know, if you maintain that over a long period of time, you become something totally different. But that's really cool, man. I don't ever want to be 25 again. I don't want to do it over again. I'm good right here where I'm at. You know what I mean?
It's definitely so being, you know, we've been married now for 2 years, and we dated for a few years before that. It's definitely been an experience for both of us because, you know, when you both have been living your own lives and then you start living life together, and for us, we have moved. We've lived in three or four different places together already. You know, we've just now landed where we are here in El Dorado. But it's crazy how, you know, small things can set somebody off. Or you look at the other one funny, and you know it's not received well. Or you know, you leave something laying. We've got, I don't know if you guys have like a catch-all spot in your house, but our island in our kitchen is our catch-all. And I'm the worst about coming in and just setting stuff down there. I'll set that there. I'll get it later. And then by the end of the week, you know, I got 15 things sitting there that I was supposed to get later. Well, it's later and I still ain't got them. And, you know, it's that kind of stuff of just being mindful and of what you would expect somebody else to do for you, if that, you know, not saying the kitchen's her territory, but the kitchen's her territory. And in order for her to be happy in there, I need to help keep it clean. So, you know, it, just being mindful has been one of the biggest things for me is like, you know, if that would irritate me, it's probably going to irritate her. So,
I would honestly say to speak to that, this is kind of a philosophy that I took from my granddad a long time ago. And if you operate off of the core principle that her heart for you is good, if everything that comes out of her mouth, the first thing you say to yourself is her heart for me is good, those offensive conversations are not offensive anymore. Like, for instance, the way she's communicating it has to be learned over a long period of time. But if you operate off of the base principle of her wanting my shit off of the island in the kitchen is so that she is happy, right? She's communicating that in the way, probably in the best way she knows possible, but her heart behind it is, it's going to make me happy if you just get your shit off of here. You know what I mean? And vice versa. So she has to also maintain this same posture of like, everything you say, my heart for you is good, you know? And if everybody's thinking that way, and you can tell really, like, really fast when it's not, when everybody's not thinking that way, because everything immediately becomes offensive. It's like asking you to not leave your mustache trimmings on the god dang sink. You know what I mean? It's like, that pisses me off. You said something. I know to get the hair off the sink. You know what I mean? And so you can feel the enemy creep into your relationship in that way. And I'll tell everybody now that's married or has been dating a long time or whatever your situation may be where you find yourself without children, this is going to get exponentially more difficult the second that thing gets there. It is going to be like I'm talking about totally different. It's totally different when the kids come because it's so much harder. It's not just a little bit harder. It's like so much
harder. Oh, yeah. There's because your focus can't always just be on keeping that other person happy. You know, you've got another full-time job that you're doing and, you know, you got to make sure that baby is clean, fed, you know, and at least mildly happy, you know. You don't want her screaming all the time. Although right now she's found her voice, so she thinks it's hilarious to just sit there and yell at you and then laugh. So, you know, there's that. But no, you're exactly right. It's exponentially harder because we thought just maneuvering arguments and stuff when we were just married and it was just the two of us, you know, we thought that was difficult. But now, you know, you have an argument and then the baby starts screaming. And, you know, say we're in the truck driving somewhere. We got the baby screaming in the back and the dog's got to pee in the floorboard. And, you know, we're heated and you just start adding it to that. And you have to be able to stop and know, regardless of what's being said, you both love each other so freaking much. And you can take a deep breath and give it 10 minutes. And then go back into your conversation very politely. Mm-hmm. At the end of the day,
90% of the time, it doesn't matter. Like, maybe more than that. Maybe like 99% of the time. It just doesn't matter. Yeah. And what you'll...
Stuff.
Yes, facts. What's funny is... And this is a way that a man needs to change his brain over time if he's going to get along with his wife really well, is that 99% of the time, the thing that you will, the hill you'll die on won't even matter to you. You're just dying on the hill to be right. Now, it does matter to her because the things that women are concerned with typically are far different than what we're concerned with. And what you'll find yourself doing is arguing for just no damn reason. You're like, I don't even care. We can just do it that way. It's not even that big of a freaking deal. And there's a slippery slope there. Like, you know, you want to make sure that whoever you do have kids with, you're equally yoked in a lot of different ways. I would say disciplining your children is a big one. That for me, I got really lucky that my wife is just on board with that. But like, if I married some bleeding heart that didn't believe in Proverbs, we'd have a problem. Because if you're a youngin' of mine, you're catching these hands if you're being turd. Like, that's a fact, Jack. So those sorts of things are very important. But there's all these other things, like for instance, what the freaking kid wears. I don't care. Just tell me what to put on them. It doesn't matter to me. You know what I mean? I had one hard line. No smocked outfits for my young men. We're not doing smocked bubbles, okay? Like, men, do not put your freaking sons in this shit. Like, don't do it. It's not worth it. They don't want to see those pictures. Their future wives don't want to see those pictures. Freaking get some Under Armour outfits and put them in that, dadgummit. Don't be putting them in no bubbles, you know. So that was my one hard line, and my wife respected that line. She also agreed that the world's just too crazy nowadays to be putting them in anything suspect. You know what I'm saying? Like, you about got to have your youngin' in boots and jeans. We're just like, hey, he's a boy, dang it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, the problem is ours is going to get mistaken for being a boy. Because, you know, she's boots and jeans and, you know, when she has shoes on anyways. Because she's one of those barefoot heathens that crawls around. And, yeah, she I don't know if she'd wear a pair of shoes if I put them on her right now.
Well, that's okay. That's better. That's a better alternative than your boy being a girl. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, Yeah, I'm not doing bubbles. No smock bubbles. But the fact is that men will quite literally die on this hill. And just a side note here, you change diapers?
I do.
Very good. Men, if you don't change your baby's diaper, I don't even know what to say about that.
Get over yourself and learn how to help.
Hey, managing doo-doo, man, is nobody wants to manage doo-doo. Everybody wants a hand in this. You know what I mean? Like, it's just unbelievable to me. Guys are like, I ain't changing that baby's diaper. I'm like, you're a freaking idiot. Like, what's wrong with you? You know?
I'm doing cloth diapers at home today. So, I mean.
I'm telling you. That's another level, son. That's another level.
It could be worse. You know, like, you know, it could always be worse.
Now, is your wife a crunchy mom? We're cloth diapering it? Did she have them at the house?
Yeah.
Let's go. All right, let's hear it. Let's hear all the things, the crunchy mom things. No vaccines, right?
Right.
None. The baby's had no vaccines.
Zilch.
Zero vaccines. We're doing cloth diapers.
She's not been to the doctor. We keep getting this letter in the mail that she's supposed to have a hearing test or whatever, but I don't know, when she's crawling towards something and I holler at her, she turns around and looks at me, so I assume she can hear. So,
get her on the whistle. Come.
Exactly.
Come.
Yeah.
Come.
Yeah.
Well, okay, so your wife practices what she preaches, son, because if you're a crunchy mom out there listening to this and you don't do cloth diapers, you ain't got a hair on your butt. I'm telling you right now, that's another level, son.
It's been a learning experience. We were blessed enough that we had a bunch of our baby shower, we had a diaper raffle or whatever, so we got a whole bunch of diapers. But she's like, I want to do this cloth diaper thing. So whenever we run out of diapers, we don't have to spend an arm and a leg on buying diapers. So we spent an arm and a leg on cloth diapers. And, you know, so
they
now
last
we're
forever.
That. Yeah. And honestly, they're not that bad. I've been shocked. So
that's crazy. It's not crazy. It's just how they did it 100 years ago. And I spent an arm and a leg on freaking diapers. I'm telling you right now. I can't wait to
roll one of them suckers up and throw them away, though.
I do appreciate efficiency, okay? And that might have been a hill I'd have died on if my wife was like, we're doing cloth diapers. I might have been like, hey, I don't know about that. We can't hardly get to laundry as is. But it's always interesting to me meeting the husband of a... Because you guys in... Here you go. You guys, a husband of a wife that is serious about this stuff, there's some things you guys are doing that everybody else ain't doing. Cloth diapers being one of them. But I'm talking about like, what? Go play, dude. Yeah, go play. Cool. That's fantastic. So there's another level there of husbandry that's being achieved that I have not quite experienced. So what are some crunchy things that you're like, yeah, I'm really kind of into this. Like, I really like this.
Oh man, the sourdough is cheap, dude. That's beneficial. I'll do dishes for sourdough. That's for certain. I'll change cloth diapers for sourdough. She has gotten into where she just, and it's not even anything like fancy. It's like, she's got just a regular loaf of bread that she does. Man, you put a little butter on that. That's the best breakfast in the mornings. And she's talked to me, her having our baby at home. That was, we mutually agreed on that, for a lot of reasons. We were going to go to, they're called a birthing center. So you go there and they have a midwife. And so it's kind of like an at-home experience. Mm-hmm. We were, month six of her being pregnant. And they called us and were like, hey, we're closing our doors. You got to find somebody else to go with or go with a hospital. Mm. So we were caught flat-footed. And so we called around and we found a midwife who, she had 9 kids of her own, and she had had them all but one at home. But she'd been a midwife for a while. And so we got a hold of her, and you know, she helped us through the whole process. And you know, she came out here to our house. She drove an hour and a half out here to help us have this baby. And I tell you what, I think there should be more babies had at home. If everything is safe to do it, mm-hmm. I think it will bring you and your wife closer, because you can be there every step of the way. And that was mm-hmm. that was a huge bonding time for her and I, just because I was with her right there the whole time, and I could help her push through the time. She looked at me a couple of times and said, "Man, I can't do this. We've got to go mm-hmm. somewhere. I cannot do this." I looked at her and, you know, I said, "Honey, you know, we're here. We're doing it now. And you know, you've got this. You know, you're the strongest. Mm-hmm. You can do this." And you know, in the end, boy, I sure wouldn't have been able to do that. She's an animal. She got her done, mm-hmm. and it was awesome. And she is so strong. And but I think that more women can do it than they think they can, but especially if you've got somebody that will be your support. You know, mm-hmm. and really all I sat there and talked to her and held her hand and helped her breathe. That was mm-hmm. all I had to do. I think it's good for husbands to be there and to be in on it, because, you know, like you said, that first year of that baby, your wife is totally different. You know, mm-hmm. for us, it was the first 6-7 months. You know, she's finally just now getting kind of back into normal routines, and everything's kind of starting to fall back into the norm. But man, the first 3 months, that was hard. That was hard on both of us. You know, we had different things we had to give up. And, you know, it took me a while to decide I wanted to give some things up. I'm a big whitetail hunter. I like hunting coyotes. You know, I like riding my horse. And I had to decide if I was going to go jack around and do what I wanted to do, or if I was going to be at home and support my wife and give her a break when the baby was crying. And be there to support her. Mm-hmm. And it's every day I'm thankful that I have tried to be more conscious of making that choice.
Mm-hmm. There's a mourning of your old life. You mourn the old life that you had, the freedom that you have as a husband with just a wife, where you can pretty much go do whatever, and she's probably thankful for the alone time. And then there's the mourning of your wife and your relationship that, if done properly, does not die, but it changes enough to mourn it. Yeah. And no one tells you.
No. And I think that's a great, great way to say it, is mourning. Like, that I think you hit the nail on the head with that, because you're never going to go back to the way it was. No. You've got to accept that fact, because you mm-hmm. have now, you know, you've leveled up. You're now a parent. You know, you do not come first now. You know, you don't get those off days anymore, to where, you know, the wife goes one way to see some friends and you go the other way. You don't do that now. Somebody's got to mm-hmm. watch the baby, you know, and so I think you're right. It's never going to be the same, but no, I'm thankful for that. I feel like after having a baby, I have grown and matured so much, but I don't recommend for somebody to, you know, to try having a baby in order to mature and stuff like that. I don't recommend doing it that way,
but no, me neither.
But definitely
I go ahead. Sorry.
Oh, but no, you, I do feel that you will you'll be thankful that you have children and that you're able to go through that struggle of learning how to manage all that. Because mm-hmm. there's just so much more that goes into it, like you said, that nobody tells you.
No, and they don't say nothing. No. They don't tell you nothing. I told my mom, I said, I spent 25 years of my life thinking everything that came out of your mouth was just dumb. And finally, I start getting to the point where I'm listening to you and you're like, have kids, have kids, have kids. And then it's the biggest flim flam anybody's ever pulled on me. It's like, what's wrong with you, dude? And like, just, I don't think it's, I think it's very difficult to understand God's love for us until you have a child of your own. Because let me tell you something, I'm not hanging my kid on a cross for you. I'm not hanging my kid on a cross for my mama. You know right. what I mean?
Right.
So once they come and you understand the weight of that decision that was made to pay for our lives, it changes you. It changes the way you look at God. It changes the way that you respond to the world. And one thing, and this is a little off topic, but one thing that I hear a lot of people talk about is prioritizing the kids. And I'm going to be the first one to say, you know, don't do that. The greatest gift I can give to my sons is showing them what loving their mother looks like. And so I prioritize my wife over everything other than Christ. Everything in the world, she is the jewel of all of it. And so my sons have a deep understanding that their mother is more important than them and that she contributes more in the house and she does more and is worth doing more for. And in the hopes that when they have their own, they prioritize their wives. You know what I mean? And yeah. So this is way harder for a wife to do than a husband. I can easily look at my sons and from a practical standpoint and say, you really offer nothing. You don't do anything to help. As a matter of fact, you're just screwing everything up. You're just tearing the house up. I love you and I'd die for you right now, but your happiness is not more important than mama's happiness. And I think a lot of people make that mistake when they're young. They prioritize their kid. And when they're your kid's age, you have to when they're babies. Right. But once they get a little older and it's like, you can sit over there and be quiet while we have our time. You know, those are, that's an important thing. That's an important thing to, through the chaos of having young ones. And as they grow, choosing to prioritize your spouse over that, is very important, I think. And I think it's important for them to see. I think they need to see you do it.
And I'm glad you bring that up because I definitely think, like you're saying, because that's something I will definitely need to be more conscious of because I'm kind of a sucker when it comes to this baby. I thought I was going to be a boy dad. Well, God mm-hmm. gave me a little girl, and man, she ain't even talking yet, and she's already got me wrapped around her little finger. And so I appreciate you bringing that up and calling that out for, you know, myself and anybody else that's listening to this, because you're exactly right. Your marriage will fall apart if you stop prioritizing your wife and just go to prioritizing those kids, because then, you know, you're no longer paying any attention to your wife. You're only worried about what those kids are doing, and you've lost everything that you had before you had kids.
Mm-hmm. Period. Period. And you know, divorce ruins a kid, man. Even the good divorces ruins their freaking life. And it's not their fault. It's our fault. And there's a lot of healing that can happen if a father or a mother chooses to apologize for their mistakes and go to their children and say, I didn't prioritize you. I prioritize me and how I felt. And, you know, and see, here's the flip side. prioritizing your children is prioritizing your marriage. Your marriage being the most important thing in your life is prioritizing your children. That's what it is. So if you don't prioritize your marriage and you prioritize your own feelings or your own wants or your own needs, right, you're casting your children to the wind. And I'm here to say that there's very much so redemption and healing and apologizing for these things. If you're a person who has found yourself divorced and you feel really guilty about it and you feel bad for your kids, don't eat that. Go tell them. Go apologize and heal that, because it's one of those deals where we make a lot of mistakes when we're young and stupid, and things happen and terrible things happen. And if you don't know, you don't know. But it's pretty easy to see through the lies or the deception when you're a kid, and people don't think that. People don't think you can't see through it. People think the kids don't know. They know. They know. They can feel it. And then when they're older, they just resent it. They're like, man. And there's a lot of things that came from my folks getting divorced that I'm appreciative of. And one of those things is how diligent I was at hunting red flags in my wife. How very important it was to me to find a woman that's willing to go toe-to-toe with the enemy to fight for a marriage. And so there's a lot of lessons learned there that I probably could have got with somebody just telling me, like, hey, man, this is very important. But I did get them through life experiences. So it's very heavy on my heart all the time, a kid that's got to grow up that way. And even in the best of circumstances, right, you can have parents who are divorced and still best friends with their ex-wife or ex-husband and all the things, and that kid's got four parents. But I'm telling you right now, nothing trumps the way God made it.
Right.
The way he made it is the way it should be. And the world, unfortunately, has a bunch of quitters in it, and you can't do that. And if you find yourself in a relationship where your wife is saying things to you like, if this happens again, I'm going to leave, freaking change. Look in the mirror and change who you are. Go to the King, get on your freaking knees, beg him for mercy, and change. Do it. Because the only thing that's going to change you is you. Your wife bitching and moaning at you ain't going to change you. It ain't going to change you. It's just going to make you mad. So you got to choose to do it. You got to get up, look yourself in the mirror, and say, I am a piece of garbage and I need some help. So do that. Little tangent there. But it's important, man. It's very important. And it gets lost in translation. Nobody prepares you for this. Nobody prepares you for the first year of the kid. Nobody prepares you for marriage, or when your wife quits wanting to sleep with you, or when you destroy her security, or nobody gets you ready for this. And it is a huge failure on fathers. A huge one. I don't want to talk bad about your mama. You're not talking bad about mom. You're talking about shit that is going to happen. It's facts. It's going to happen. Like, and then from the response of the kid, right? Like, your sons need to know that you sleep with their mom. What? That's not weird. That's not a weird thing. And so if your sons are like, oh, gross, and they don't listen to anything, well, what? How do you prepare them? How do you say, at some point in my marriage, your mother quit wanting to sleep with me? You can't. So if you posture your children from the time of infancy, like where you're at, to where mine are at 6, all the way up to 18, if you have this open and honest relationship where nothing is weird, nothing's weird to talk about. Of course I sleep with your mom. We're in a healthy marriage. That's how it's supposed to be, right? It's not weird. We're not thinking about mom in that way. We're just having the conversation of when you turn 27 and you have a baby for the first time, your wife's not going to want to sleep with you. This is why. And this is what you do. This is how you handle it with some grace and empathy. And don't be a total dick about it. Like, that's what you do. And so there's this breakdown in communication between father to son, father to daughter, mother to son, where it's like all this stuff is weird to talk about. It's all the enemy. The enemy has implanted this weirdness around something that is just so special. The marriage relationship is just the most special thing on earth. And the enemy has made it to where we can't talk about it anymore with our own parents. And so then you have no clue what to do. So now then everybody what?
Goes, yeah, everybody goes to the internet. And what's on the internet? The enemy. Yes. Yeah. That is the only thing you're going to find on the internet is the enemy.
Yep. Facts.
And that is not how kids. Then you end up divorced. Yeah. Yeah. And that is totally setting our future generations up for failure. Like mm-hmm. you said, if we're not comfortable talking about it, how are they ever going to learn it through a Christ-centered, you know, with Christ at the center of the teaching, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So if we're not comfortable talking about it, then they're never going to hear about it. And then they have no idea on what's healthy and what's not healthy.
Exactly. Hey, Bill. So it's good. That was a real tangent right down the old rabbit trail. But I don't know, dude. I get all jazzed up about this stuff because I'm just like, man, nobody says anything, you know? Nobody says anything.
You getting
and then
jazzed up about it.
Well, thank you.
You got it. Somebody's got to call everybody out on it. And, you know, I was listening to one of your podcasts the other day, and you was talking about an old boy that's a preacher out of like Alabama or something. And he's like, mm-hmm. he's pulling these people out, you know, hammer down, you know, the Christ you're living for is not the true Christ, you know, mm-hmm. and if somebody's not out there calling people out on it, it ain't all love and grace. It ain't. We're down in the trenches. There's places we don't want to go, but you got to go.
Yeah. Well, and I was thinking about it the other day, you know, a lot of people bring up, they'll say stuff like, hey man, you're distracting me so bad. Like, what are you doing? You're all jazzed up. Go play, okay? Bruh. I was thinking about it the other day. People will say things like, and this is terrible. Like, I should not say this, but I'm going to say it because I don't know what else to say. Because this is the way I look at myself. People are like, well, why do bad things happen to good people? Or why do babies get sick? Or why do X insert thing here? You know, why would God do that? And I always think of God as the Father. Okay? Now, I'm a father. And when old Skipjack here makes a mistake, what do I do? Right? I offer one of two things. Grace or punishment. There's two things coming down the line, and both are good. Both are good. Both are necessary. In Proverbs, it says, spank your children to save them from the devil. Literally, it says that in Proverbs, okay? Everybody says, spare the rod. Yeah, sure. You kind of got to look into that one a little bit. But freaking spank your kids to save them from the devil? Okay. Noted. But there's also grace. And so sometimes my son gets grace. Sometimes he gets a freaking butt whooping. And I think about myself pre-Christ and everything that happened in my life that could be considered suffering, right, is a butt whooping. It's like God is allowing you to live with your decisions. And so if you think about God as a father and you are living like a total piece of garbage, right? Just throwing God the old middle finger, okay? You can't tell me there ain't a butt whooping coming. You can't tell me. If your daddy loves you, which he does, you're going to get the belt. I'm just saying. So you have to start learning from these things and going to the Father. Like, I don't know if that's even true, but I know the whole Old Testament is full of some wrath, dude. You know what I'm saying? Like, there's a lot of wrath going on in the Old Testament. And Jesus came to save us from our sins, but if God is the Father, what does the Father do with a bunch of disobedient youngins? Freaking hear that leather slapping, you know what I mean?
Sure.
So, I don't know, man. I'm kind of on the fence. And you know what? I love God. I love God as the Father. I do. And I go to him every day, all day, most days. And I'm looking to him to help me. And with a soft heart. And that's what I like for myself when I spank my youngins. The only time my youngins get a spanking is for two things. I spank for disrespect and I spank for safety. So both of my sons, their first butt whooping was running off in the road. So, I mean, it's get hit by a car or get hit by my hand, you know. So they both got butt whoopings, the first one, right? And then so on and so forth. What I look for as they get older, right, as they start understanding what respect is, disrespect is I look for softness, same as in a horse. So if I ask my son, if I say, hey, that'll do, like, be quiet. That'll do at my house means be quiet. And if he shuts his mouth, that's it. I don't just go hauling across the house smacking him because he's being loud. You know what I mean?
Right.
But if the response to my that'll do is a middle finger, so to speak, right? Not a physical one, but like right. A screw you, Dad. I'm not listening. We immediately go to phase four. It's like, that'll do, butt whooping. You know what I'm saying? So what I'm looking for is softness. So if there's a softness to a, hey, be quiet, we're done. We're not getting a spanking. You know what I mean? Like you were being obnoxious or disrespectful while I'm talking or whatever, but now we soften to that. And that, so that's the posture I take with the King. It's like if I do something wrong, if I sin, if I feel bad, if I'm like needing help or whatever, like I approach the King with a level of softness that I would look for out of my own children. It's like how in Matthew it talks about becoming as a child. You know what I mean? Like that's the way I'm a child of the King, you know? So I approach him in that manner, the same way I would expect my kids to approach me. And so I just think that people don't, all they preach at church is love and grace and sweetness and kindness and blah, blah, blah. He's a father. Like, that ain't how it is in my house. You know what I mean? So that's the only way I know to kind of look at it, if that makes any sense.
Well, and I think you explain it well on, you know, referencing it back to the Old Testament. Is it what, it's not like they preach, like you're saying, all, you know, daisies and rainbows, you know, mm-hmm. if you don't know what's expected of you and that, you know, you're going to get that butt whooping mm-hmm. later in life, life is going to hit you in the face or you're going to get fired from your job because you gave your boss the middle finger and, mm-hmm. you know, nobody taught you growing up that you can't do that.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's better.
I fired a guy today because of that. This morning.
Well, you know, you'll have that, and it's I would rather, you know, as a child, I would rather get taught at a young age, you know, hey, this is why we don't do this,
mm-hmm.
you know, and then get my butt whooped versus then later in life being a piece of crap that gets fired every time I get mad, you know.
Yep.
So.
Period. Interesting. Well, it's all good stuff, and it's all the way you look at it. And our earthly fathers have a lot to do with this, which puts a huge burden on us, or a huge pressure, so to speak, on us to be the example of what God the Father is to us. And or is to them, you know what I mean? And so you, it's very hard for a human to try to be just and fair and all the things that God actually is. But the fact of the matter is that if God is the Father, then there's two sides of that. There's grace, which is real, very real. There's mercy, which is very real. Grace and mercy are very real. But there's also like, you're being a turd. Stop being a turd, you know? And I don't think people take that into consideration all the time. But with all that being said, I think you're doing good, man. I think you looking at yourself critically is a good thing. And I think you should keep doing it. And I think you should communicate deeply with your wife. What makes you happy too? I think that's very important as well. Is like just like she needs you to do the dishes and help around the house and do all the things, you're going to need the words of affirmation. You're going to need the support system. You're going to need somebody in your corner rooting for you. And she might already do that, but everybody listening, their wife might not be. And if you assume that she knows to do this, you're wrong. You're wrong. Just communicate it. Just say, hey, and it doesn't have to sound like you never tell me good job. That doesn't work. It would sound more like, I really love it when you tell me good job. Same exact phrase. One's heard, one's resented.
Yep.
Just like that. So if you keep that in mind as you move forward, it's like, hey, I'm going to get up and freaking get after it every day. And my goal is to honor you and love you and treat you like the jewel of my life that you are. But with that being said, man, damn it, I sure love an attaboy. You know what I mean? Like, and I'm telling you, I said it in that other podcast. I was like, I could pretty much live forever off of sex and attaboys. Like those two things, I don't even need to eat. I can do it forever. So if you're a wife listening, just walk in there and tell them good job, because we love to hear it. And most men are that way. Not all probably, but most men, just a good job goes way farther than you think. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Merritt, what else you got for me, brother?
I really don't have a whole lot. I probably need to go find this baby and make sure she's still swinging. I put her in her swing, and I checked on her a little bit ago, and she was zonked. So
sleeping in the swing? What a champ.
Yeah, we haven't quite moved to naps in the crib yet, where that's a battle we have not yet decided to fight.
Yeah. Well, hey, hills get climbed every day. It doesn't have to be the mountain. You know what I mean? There's a bunch of false summits coming. So just get to one, rest for a minute, and then keep going. We'll get there eventually. I'm not there, but one day we'll get there. About the time we got grandkids probably. But Merritt, man, I sure do appreciate you coming on, brother. Thanks for shouting out the other people for the podcast. Maybe we'll be able to get them on. And yeah, dude, thanks so much for giving me your time.
Well, thank you for having me on. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem, brother. Guys, as always, Dalton at 310EDU. If you need me, if you want to come on the podcast or want to share a story, please hit me up there. TheArtOfSufferingPodcast.com. We got apparel. We got some hats coming. So check that out. As always, never weaken. And thanks for listening.